It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you to each and every one of you for joining us, for listening. You're treasured, you're valued, you each have a purpose, strive for excellence, and take care of yourself, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. So thank you. And also thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Producer Steve, do we have a show planned for everybody today?
Yeah, if all the pieces come together, it'll be awesome.
Well, they better. I sure hope that they do. In studio with me is my friend. She is a patriot. She is also a sponsor of this show, and that is Helen Jean Mitchell. Helen, it is great to have you here.
Great to be here, Kim. Guess what day it is? It's Wednesday.
I thought you were going to say it was your birthday or
no,
something.
No.
It's hump day. It is Wednesday. So, yes, you've made it through half the week. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can find all the recaps and podcasts of the shows there. And I guess I should give a little bit of a disclaimer. We have been doing some upgrading. And we don't quite have everything where it's really easy to click on it. If you have a show that you are looking for and you can't find it, just email us, kim@kimmunson.com, and we will get that to you.
Hey, I'm sorry to jump in on here. That reminds me, because something after you left the station yesterday, something was up regarding our show on Monday with Cynthia.
Oh, yes. And I did get that. I got that email, and I did send that information over.
Okay. Well, there were other people calling the front desk and saying they couldn't find the website, and it's all because of that little play on words.
Okay.
JustDefy.org. Too many times, I think people were looking for the word justify.
Okay.
So
just a
point.
So that website was JustDefy.org. JustDefy.org. And yeah. Okay. Good to know. And you can email us at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to keep our independent voice on the airwaves. Helen Jean Mitchell, I'm so excited about our guest, Cheryl Akison, in segments 3 and 4. She's written this book, Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And our independent voice is an important one out there, and you're a big part of it because you're a sponsor of the show. So thank you.
You're welcome, Kim. Glad to do it.
And I'm excited. I know you're excited to talk to Cheryl as well.
Oh, yes.
So we'll be talking with her in segments 3 and 4. And let's see here. Let's go to our inspiration or our wisdom quote. This is so interesting. I am always looking for a quote to have something to do with what we're doing on the show, so I was looking for censorship quotes. And I was talking to somebody that I know well. She's a millennial and a philosophy major, and she suggested John Stuart Mill. And certainly there was an excellent censorship quote. Let me tell you a little bit about him. You probably all know about him, but I'm learning all the time. And John Stuart Mill was born in 1806 and died in 1873. And he was the most influential English language philosopher of the 19th century. He was a naturalist, a utilitarian, and a liberal, whose work explores the consequences of a thoroughgoing empirist outlook. In doing so, he sought to combine the best of 18th century Enlightenment thinking with newly emerging currents of 19th century romantic and historical philosophy. His most important works include System of Logic, that was 1843, On Liberty, 1859, Utilitarianism, 1861, and an examination of Sir William Hamilton's philosophy in 1865. Now, you didn't go to school with him. He was a couple of years ahead of you, Steve. Is that right?
Don't go there.
Okay, here we go. First thing, this is the first quote I wanted to share with you. When one's ideas are not challenged, one's ability to defend them weakens. And producer Steve, I thought that is so appropriate right now, is that what we're seeing with all the big media and in big education, let me call it the media industrial complex, the education industrial complex, is they do not want to even have their ideas challenged. And that only happens because they don't want to have to defend them, because in effect they may not be able to, it may not be able to stand up to the test of scrutiny, Steve.
Well, the other half of that is when one's ideas are not challenged. I got to think, how many people don't have ideas? You know, they are so entrenched in going with the flow and really not very well versed on anything. It's like, do you have an idea?
And, you know, that brings up a term, intellectual curiosity. Helen Jean Mitchell, I know that intellectual curiosity is something that is really important to you as you were preparing for this show and looking at censorship. I mean, I'm looking at some of the notes that we have here. Intellectual curiosity is something that is very important to you.
Yes. Well, one of my biggest fears is, you know, when you get up in front of a crowd is, you know, I don't want to sound stupid. Right? I just don't want to sound stupid. And my father always taught me, you need to be prepared, you need to be educated, you need to review, you know, need to know history so that you can back up what you're going to say. And, you know, just don't embarrass the family.
Well, and preparation is really a key to success. But producer Steve, I found this other quote from John Stuart Mill. And again, he was born in 1806. He died in 1873. He was considered the most influential English language philosopher of the 19th century. And this one, I thought we need to unpack this just a little bit.
Before you read it, you need to put a disclaimer out. This one's rather caustic.
Well, it is. But I thought about it. He's been studied in colleges for years and years and years. You can see that he's considered very influential, very effective. And this quote, he said, although it is not true that all conservatives are stupid people, it is true that most stupid people are conservative. Now, I've been talking about this battle of the narrative right now. I did not have an idea that the word conservative, I mean, this is in the mid-19th century that they were going after it. And of course, that was during that time that you were starting to see that push towards progressivism. That was coming out of the mid-1800s. And so, as Helen just said here, she prepares so she doesn't appear stupid. Well, who on earth would want to say, I'm conservative, because here's one of the most influential people out there saying that if you're conservative, basically you're stupid. I mean, what do you think of that, Helen?
It just, you know, there's a play on words here, too. You know, most conservatives as a person, and then they turn it around and say, are conservatives as an adjective. That makes a difference in what they're saying here. I think most people today are conservative because they practice...
like fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, fiscal responsibility. You may even say nobody likes to... use waste resources, any kind of resources.
Well, and there has been this push, though, I think, in colleges. I saw it from a number of young people that they were being taught that conservatives, they basically wanted to take advantage of the land, take advantage of water, take advantage of other people, when in essence what you're seeing is those that really want to take advantage of people. The veil is off now. It is the radical activist group that has taken over the Democrat Party. So if you're a Blue Dog Democrat, you're a libertarian, an independent, a Republican, a conservative, I think we can all actually come together and conserve the idea, the American idea, that all men are created equal by God with these rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That is really what the word conservative means. But I thought it was important, because I did not realize that this war on language had been occurring for so many years. And also I think that he pretty well nails it on his censorship quotes. And of course, we will be talking with Cheryl Atkison with that in segments 3 and 4. We'll also be going through some headlines, a couple of things. The long appropriations bill is finally out. And I think that you will be shocked to find out what is actually happening with Colorado finances. And I think we'll talk about that just a little bit. And this is from the Center Square. It says, Colorado Senate Democrats introduced the 2021 budget bill. And we've just gone through the scamdemic, where POLIS has basically shut down our state. It is a ghost town going up and down one of the thoroughfares in my hometown with the number of restaurants that have gone out of business. And there's been a real assault on small business. And unbelievable to me, the state's budget is projected to be $34.1 billion, which is an 11% increase from the previous year, despite the scandemic. And it includes funding for one-time projects, relief measures for low-income Coloradans, and funding to enhance the state's economic resiliency. We've actually seen the way to get an economic engine going is, first of all, to not shut down our small businesses, and secondly, to reduce regulations, reduce taxes, and that is where you can really have economic resiliency. But under this particular funding budget that we have here, is it puts more and more government, more and more decisions, more and more money in the pockets of government. And we have to wonder, where did that 11% increase from the previous year, where did all that money come from? And I would suggest that's probably the payoff from the Biden plan, where they're printing money and then paying off the blue state governors, the blue state mayors, for the very, very bad decisions that they made. So the money they say will be going to, this is what the Democrats say, that the money will be allocated to what they call the Big Six, the Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, the Department of Education, the Department of Higher Education, I guess we should say the Department of Indoctrination, the Department of Higher Indoctrination, the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Corrections and the Judicial Department. However, this is the quote from the Senate Republicans. This is Sage Nauman, who is a spokesperson for the Colorado Senate GOP. Said, Senate Republicans remain committed to ensuring our state prioritizes jobs, students, and our roads and bridges in this year's budget. He says there's no pet, the GOP is advocating for no pet projects, no experiments, no social engineering. Let's help the businesses our government regulations hurt. Let's catch our students up, because our kids are falling behind, my friends. Our kids are falling behind. And let's make a legitimate investment in our roads and bridges without raising taxes or fees, he added. So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, one of my great sponsors is Hooters Restaurants. It is Wednesday. That means it's Wings Day at Hooters Restaurants. And, you know, Helen Mitchell, when you and I and all of our girls get together, I get Hooters wings, and they're always a real hit. Do you ever get them when I order them?
Oh, yeah. I'm right there at the table along with everybody else, standing in line, watching them vanish.
Poof. And those smoked wings are fantastic. They're half the calories. And you can go to my website to get all the specials at Hooters Restaurants. They do have those five locations, which is Aurora, Westminster, Colorado Springs, Lone Tree, and Loveland. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back. Helen Jean Mitchell is in studio.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. In studio with me is one of my great partners and sponsors of the show, and that is Helen Jean Mitchell. And Helen, during break, we had talked before we went to break about the state's budget, the long bill, has been presented, and you had a question or a comment.
Yeah, I was back at the, what is economic resiliency? I mean, isn't that normal trade and commerce spurred on by people's freedom to make choices? I mean, now we're going to tax you to do that, which is what?
Right. Taxing more people. But those are words that people like. Doesn't economic resiliency sound great? But whenever government gets involved, and we've seen this as the bills that we look at, there's just a number of them. It's a redistribution from people, from one person to another. And when you start to tax somebody because they've been more successful, maybe they've worked a lot more hours than 40 hours a week, they've taken risks or whatever, it's not fair to tax them more and tax somebody else less, I don't think. I think it should be the same percentage across the spectrum, because then I think we'd make better decisions at the voting box.
Yeah, I mean, it's like economic, what is it, a pill? I mean, I don't understand. You know, we're going to fund this so that you can be that way when it, you know, it's an action. You need to have the initiative to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that in essence, they're using the word economic resiliency, but yet it was government, Helen, that shut down our businesses.
Oh, yes.
And so now they want to come in and say they're going to help. You're seeing this term coming out of the World Economic Forum, and it's also Joe Biden's campaign slogan, and that is Build Back Better. Well, you know what? And I think a lot of people have seen what happened under the Trump administration with lower regulations, lower taxes. I talked to a number of people that are maybe more apolitical, and they said, you know, I did pretty well under the Trump administration. And they're going to see that things are changing a bit under the Biden administration.
Yeah, fewer impediments to letting me do what I need to do.
And have the responsibility for your decisions. I want to go over to another headline. This is from CNBC and Janet Yellen. She is the Treasury Secretary, and on Monday, she will call for, I guess this is next Monday, for a minimum tax levy on corporations around the world in an effort to keep companies from relocating to find lower rates. She said, we are working with G20 nations to agree to a global minimum corporate tax rate that can stop the race to the bottom, Yellen told the Chicago Council on Global Affairs in prepared remarks. The remarks came as President Joe Biden looks to raise the corporate tax rate as a way to pay for a $2 trillion infrastructure improvement plan. And under the administration's proposal, the corporate tax rate would climb from 28% from 21%. And that increase would come just 4 years after former President Donald Trump slashed the rate from 35%, which at that time was the highest in the world. And one reason the Trump administration cut the corporate tax rate was the rash of U.S. companies offshoring or moving their domiciles to countries with lower corporate tax rates, even though much of their operations happened domestically. It says Yellen will tell the conference that establishing a minimum global corporate rate will help bring stability and provide a more level playing field for all countries. And then she uses the word competitiveness, right? You're going to use government to actually say we're not going to be competitive between countries. But she said it's more about than how U.S. headquartered companies fare against other companies in global merger and acquisition bids. It's about making sure that governments have stable tax systems that raise sufficient revenues to invest in essential public goods and respond to crisis, that all citizens fairly share the burden of financing government.
Yeah, see, now here's another word here, global. Now, how are you going to enforce that?
See, that's the real question.
So I'm going to tax you because I know you're here, but somebody over there, I'm going to tell them, but how are you going to enforce that?
And I think that you've really hit the nail on the head, because once again, corporations, even though you see how they're acting down in Georgia, which I know, Steve, that is one of the things that you just can't believe with this whole Major League Baseball All-Star game that is now coming to Colorado, which I feel is probably we have been draconian here in our lockdowns, and we still are. And I almost feel like it's a reward to Colorado for the draconian things that they're doing. But you've seen corporations down in Georgia where they're stepping up and they're saying that we don't want to have voter ID laws and, you know, saying that's a real problem. But yet, you're also seeing that corporations don't like to pay more in taxes. And I kind of got off the rails over there on that Major League Baseball thing. And so you would see, even though corporations say that they support these draconian policies, that when it comes right down to the bottom line, they move to states, they move to countries where they pay less in taxes. And Biden and Harris and the administration saw what happened the last time they had such high taxes and corporations left the United States. When Donald Trump got into office and slashed that corporate tax rate, those businesses came back to America. Now what's happening is Janet Yellen knows that the policies that Biden is putting in place is those corporations, even though they say they like these leftist policies, they don't really, and so they're trying to stop them from leaving. But what will happen then, and I think, Helen, you and I were talking about this, is there's going to be a wink-wink, because I think that the U.S. under Biden is losing status in the world. You saw the way that the Chinese treated our representatives up in Alaska. And so they'll wink, wink, say, oh, yes, we are going to agree to this corporate tax rate. And then I see them making deals on the side.
Oh, sure, on the backside, sure.
And so I think that we will see corporations leave, which will mean even less jobs for Americans. And you saw right off the bat when Biden came into office with shutting down the construction of the XL pipeline. I mean, people lost their jobs immediately. Steve, what's your thoughts on this global tax?
I think, you know, here we go again, the Miss Janet Yellen is talking about both sides of her face at the same time. And maybe she's just been around Obama and Biden too much. But it's just, what do they have against being competitive? There's one question for you, and you've already answered it. So what was the other thing that struck me while you were explaining this? It's just enforcement. Again, you already touched on that as well. It just defies imagination, and ultimately, which you've already addressed. I don't know why you tossed to me, because you've already covered all this.
Well, it's always good to hear something a second time.
Well, yeah, again, what we have witnessed in the last 6 years or so, when Trump brought the tax rate down to 21%, and, you know, Biden's going to jack it right back up to, you know, thankfully he's only stopping at, 28, but still. And then, to your point regarding what this nonsense in Georgia, I guarantee you the heads of Major League Baseball, the head of Coke, the head of Delta, they're all very wealthy men. Do they really give a flip about trying to, you know,
everyday people?
Yeah, that and trying to get our voting system back in check. No, they really don't, because it allows the left to keep on doing what they're committed to do. And unfortunately, I just wish I could hear a good idea come from the left, a good philosophy in government. You won't hear it. And therefore, all we have is this nonstop attack on our voting system to make sure it keeps going in their direction and in the absence of any really good policy.
Well, I didn't want to mention one other thing. The narrative out there is, oh, corporations are bad. Corporations have hurt people. When you really look at it over history, and in the 20th century, it was not corporations that killed millions and millions and millions of people. It was governments with Marxist ideas, fascist ideas. So there's Mao in China. There was Pol Pot in Cambodia. There was Stalin. There was Hitler. Those are not corporations. Those are governments that came in and actually hurt everyday people. It wasn't corporations, but they've tried to say that corporations are the big bad guys. Actually, Lincoln had been concerned about corporations gaining too much power. And we are seeing that in America right now. Big business and big government like each other. But I find it really ironic that here we have these NGOs, they're non-governmental organizations, they're nonprofits, that they don't pay a corporate tax, or unions, big money, they don't pay corporate tax, but yet it's the corporations that they say that they're going to go after. And I just wanted to make that point. Helen, you look like you had a comment. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, the government is filled with non-elected bureaucrats, you know, and their agenda is to stay non-elected and to get paid, mm-hmm. you know, and have something to justify their agenda.
Their existence.
To keep them there.
Mm-hmm. And bureaucrats, they are not creating anything. They are being paid by tax dollars from people that go out and produce. And as you mentioned, they don't solve the problem, because if they solve the problem they said they were working on, then they would be out
then
of a job.
Then they'd be gone.
They'd be out of a job.
And that's what most people do in corporate America. You know, once you're finished with the task, once you're finished with the project, you either go to another project, but most of the time you're gone.
If the project is over, yes.
Well, starting in 2012, when Biden and his force was in power, and this is just a rewind from that.
It is.
We're just backing up to the same trough.
The thing that is interesting, though, is it seems like that they are on just this warp speed mission to unravel all of the great things that happened under the Trump administration. I think a lot of people are paying attention. When we talked with Josh Phillip the other day, he mentioned that there is an awakening. I think that's true. And we're going to be seeing, I think we're going to see a real grassroots movement pushing back on this, not only here in America, but across the world. And Jason McBride, Senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management, is on the line. And hey, Jason, I thought this was so interesting about Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen looking like she's going to try to strong arm other countries into having a corporate tax rate so that it's even, so that people don't leave because of our very bad policies that Biden Harris are going to be putting into place. What do you think?
Well, I guess interesting is an interesting word, Kim. I think when, you know, you get a government that's trying to, you know, control the entire global corporate market with incentives and threats and corporate tax rates and extra taxes and all that type of thing, I don't know how you expect to get a good outcome out of that. However, I do believe that, you know, a lot of the corporations are so in bed these days with the government that, you know, they'll get exemptions and exceptions.
Yes.
And they won't end up paying a lot of it anyway. Now, I don't want to sound like Biden and Elizabeth Warren making claims that our corporations don't pay a penny in income tax, because that is not true. I mean, I've looked at the 10K, so... Kim, I'm all over the place because their messaging is so all over the place on this that you can't figure out what they're saying from one day to the next.
Well, and actually corporations pass the taxes on to the consumer, but it's also in some ways it's double taxation, because the consumer is paying taxes with their own money, and then they're buying products that are being taxed as well. But I want to drill down on this fact that the NGOs, which have become very powerful, these non-governmental organizations, these big, big, quote-unquote, nonprofits, they don't pay taxes, but yet they're making money. You can be guaranteed that they're making money. So, hey, Jason McBride, with all that's going on, and there's a lot of unknowns, but there are knowns out there, I would suggest that people sit down with you to do their planning as we're looking into the future. And the market is at an extreme high. Again, not giving any tax or giving any investment advice, but it may make some sense to move some things around. And you're the guy to talk to about that.
Well, I agree with you, Kim. And the market feels high, not just because it's at record highs. When you look at the valuations and the PE ratios, I mean, just about every ratio in the market is, you know, 2 to 2.5, in some cases 3 times, you know, higher than normal. And I think this will be a period at some point. I don't know what the catalyst will be, but when it does eventually come down, I think it could be pretty breathtaking. And I think it'll be one of those times when people will look back and say, you know, why didn't I take some gains when it seemed obvious that everything was so high and so precarious? So I agree with you, Kim. I think it's worth taking a look at, doing a little bit of a deep dive into your overall plan, and figure out if you need to take as much risk as you may be taking, or if you could accomplish your goals with less risk and headache. So
yeah, Sorry, yeah, Kim. That makes sense. I think, Helen, you had something you wanted to say.
You know, I think most people, it'd be valuable just to know where you are. I mean, I don't think a lot, you know, I mean, I'm not even talking about planning for the future. I'm talking about where am I right now?
Right.
What do I have?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to plan for the future if you don't know where you're starting from. So I agree with both you guys. I think, you know, starting with a good plan, showing where you are and where it might take you is very, very helpful. And, you know, I know sometimes people are worried that they're going to come in and do a plan and get bad news. Honestly, I find, Kim, most people are actually in maybe better shape than they think they are, and they're pleasantly surprised when we can put their dreams and desires, and it's your plan. We just help you put it on paper so you can visualize it and see what it looks like. So I rambled a little too long, and I'm sorry about that, Kim, but give us a call to make an appointment. Give us a call at 303-694-1600. That's 303-694-1600.
Jason, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim.
You bet. And in studio with me is a great sponsor, Helen Jean Mitchell. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Cheryl Atkison, and I'm really excited about it. She has a book out, Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. I tell you what, we're living that right now. So we'll be right back with Cheryl Atkison.
Controlling your own destiny. There are a lot of unknowns on the horizon with the new administration. Predovich & Company is here to help. Trusted professionals for all your bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting needs. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. They've been helping her for years. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company works with clients from anywhere in the United States. Give them a call at 303-791-3000 to put Predovich & Company to work for you. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. In studio with me is a great sponsor of the show. Of this show, and in particular, is Helen Jean Mitchell. She is a patriot. She is a friend. And thrilled to have on the line with me Cheryl Atkison. You know her. She was a CBS award-winning reporter. She is the host of Full Measure on Sinclair Television. She is the author of many books, but her most recent, Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism, is a very important book right now. Cheryl Atkison, welcome to the show. Oops, we did have her. We'll have her back in just a minute here. I looked up. yes, she has written a very important book. And I know, Helen, you are excited about having this conversation because this censorship that's going on in America right now is just astounding.
Yeah, it just happened to me in an experience I had about 2 weeks ago. I think all of you maybe have heard about it from University of Colorado.
That was with Professor John Eastman. Mm-hmm. And you were pretty shocked because, you know, it's important. Higher education is important to you, and the freedom of thought is really important to you as well.
Yes, and that's what their policy department espouses, is having these professors come in and encourage that.
Okay, and so we have talked about that when Professor John Eastman was canceled, basically, by, first of all, Chapman University out in California, and then he's visiting professor conservative thought and policy. Basically got canceled here as well. But let's jump over here. We have Cheryl Atkison on the line. Cheryl, I had everything set up that you are, your new book, and that you're the host of Full Measure. But this book that you've written, Cheryl, is I can't believe where we are in America right now with the censorship.
For me, too. I mean, look back at 6 years ago, and as I write, there was nobody asking for this. Nobody in the general public was saying, come in and mediate my news and censor and curate my information. And I believe the interests that are working to control the news and information online really worked hard with an organized campaign to make a demand for it, to make us think that we needed third parties to come in and curate our information for us so that they could do exactly as they're doing and control it.
Cheryl, as I was looking for quotes, I always do some quotes for the day, and I was astounded. I found a quote by General Westmoreland, who was, I think he was in the Nixon administration. And he said that something along the line of censorship is necessary because the public may not be able, I'll find the quote, but the public can't really process, or the way I took it, can't really process everything. And I thought, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that even back then we were having comments about censorship. And really concerning to me, Cheryl.
Well, you know, there has always been an element of push me, pull you with us deciding in the news what stories do and don't get told. There's always gatekeeping going on. But I think the likes to which we're seeing now, the open admission that we're simply banning views and people and studies and stories outright and kind of admitting it and acting as though we're doing it as a service, those who are censoring the information. And then to see journalism groups and journalism colleges cheering on this trend in some cases and saying this is a great thing to not only be censoring but also inserting bias and opinion and hard news pieces. It's really something, you know, for these propagandists to have been able to accomplish this in a short period of time.
Do you think more and more people are waking up to what is happening?
Well, I do. I mean, I would say there's a way to look at this as desperation. I think the interests that have worked very hard to control the information landscape have found time and again, there are too many people that are not listening. And this started, I believe, in 2016, when these interests felt they had fairly well controlled the news landscape, and yet Donald Trump was elected. How was he elected when pretty much every media outlet was telling people that he was dangerous and shouldn't be elected? And that's what I think set off these interests who worked to control our information, wrote about that industry in the smear. That's when they set about to say, well, they blamed it on the internet that people were still able to get information, whether it's connecting with Donald Trump or whatever they wanted online, even though maybe the news was pretty well controlled. So these interests set out to say, for the next 4 years, we have to work to control the internet, just as we've tried to control the news and make information not available. Then they looked in the last election and saw that 70 million people still voted for Donald Trump, even more after they spent 4 years not telling people that he was uniquely dangerous. So again, I think they have to clamp down in a very obvious way because just not sinking in with tens of millions of Americans.
Cheryl, speaking, you mentioned Donald Trump, and when I was looking at your website, you actually are publishing some of the things that he is saying, and you are really nonpartisan. I look at you as a real journalist, someone who is bringing news, and of course you do have opinion on things as well. But I found that interesting that you were actually publishing some of his statements because they're not getting published other places. What's your thought process on that?
Well, I just never imagined there would be a major newsmaker, probably one of the most well-known people in the world, who at least I couldn't even find information on him once he was banned from media and news. So when I was looking just as a reporter to find statements or what he was doing, whatever was going on, I had a hard time doing it. I haven't been able to connect with the Trump people. Finally, I was able to get on a mailing list. First, I couldn't get many of the mailings, but now I think I'm getting most of them. And I thought other people are looking for this information too. And I've changed my mission a little bit of my website. I'm trying to publish unreported and banned and censored information. I even have a tab called The Censored at CherylAtkisson.com where I've got a list of people and ideas and things that are being improperly, in my view, censored, whether they're left or right or non-political. This is happening to a lot of people and entities and studies and ideas. I think it's very dangerous. So when I can, I will put Donald Trump's censored or banned information just unedited on my website for people to see, as I do with a lot of information that I think, you know, certain powerful interests don't want people to get.
Boy, that's really important. And it's CherylAtkison.com. And Cheryl spelled S-H-A-R-Y-L, and then it's A-T-T-K-I-S-S-O-N. Now, I'm looking at your website right now. You said you are going to have a spot there for things that are being censored or banned. I'm not seeing it right off the bat. So is there going to be
If you look at the very top tab, there's a tab that says the censored.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'm just listing, you know, it's not a comprehensive list, but I'm trying to, when I have time, add things and people to the list. You can probably see a couple of things on there look familiar, in addition to Donald Trump.
Wow, this is amazing work that you're doing. We're going to go to break here in just a moment. In studio with me is one of my great sponsors, Helen Jean Mitchell, and I know that you put together some thoughts regarding this whole censorship thing. Was there, you know, anything in particular or that you... Okay, then we'll continue on. I had another question for you, though, Cheryl, before we go to break, and that is your lawsuit that you had, to the Department of Justice? Was it two lawsuits? Now I can't remember, but where are you at on that?
Well, I just filed a new one. They keep getting dismissed. I can't even get the foolproof forensic evidence that shows the government intrusion. There's no doubt about that. Can't even get to court because the Department of Justice is defending the guilty agents and keeps arguing successfully for dismissal, most recently because Rod Rosenstein, one of the ones we were suing, formerly of Department of Justice, has immunity for these actions. So, you know, we keep going back at it. We're now suing the John Does, a couple of people who are named, and the federal agents who are unnamed, but we can't know who they are till we get discovery. But we can't get discovery, the courts say, till we know who they are.
Isn't that astounding?
Yeah, where have we heard this before?
Yeah. Sort of like asking the victim of a murder to solve their own crime before they can get justice. It's pretty hard.
Yeah, do all the work so then I can say that I did it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, Cheryl, let's go to break. But again, I recommend go to her website, and it's right there, censored. You've got all kinds of important information. And you're just really someone that is trying to present truth to people, Cheryl.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is sort of the old-fashioned mission of a lot of journalists that is really changing. You can even see journalists and journalism colleges, to my shock, and journalism organizations redefining journalism to be what I consider the opposite of what it is. They're saying things such as, you know, it's good that neutrality and objectivity are being abandoned. And I just, it's just the opposite of everything we're supposed to be about, and they're trying to redefine it and make the public think that the mission is something that's sort of like from 1984 doublespeak, the opposite of what it is.
I know it. Helen, you had a comment?
Yeah, it seems like the news reporting the basic news of, you know, entertainment, sports, commerce running, you know, throughout the gamut of the city and the county and the country even, has lost its luster in favor of a spiced up version with an uncomfortable mixture of opinions and journalism.
Well, I think you've really nailed it. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah, I think you put your finger on it. And, you know, in a way that almost sounds innocent, like, well, they're just sort of looking for clicks and eyeballs. But I actually think it's more organized and even deeper than that. Yes, they're looking for the scandal and the sensationalism. But behind that are organizations that are working very hard to make sure certain topics are reported a certain way and other topics are left completely off the table.
Okay.
It seems like a news staff now even serves its own purposes of publishing editorials for each other and not on behalf of the audience. And all these have proven to be a great revenue generator for them, which, of course, drives all this.
You know, I wrote about, I called it news reporting for each other and itself. This is another fairly recent phenomenon that you see journalists in papers like the Washington Post and the New York Times talking and reporting to each other and to other newsmakers, you know, using each other to give little messages and political messages to one another, not telling us about the news, sort of this inside baseball reporting that means very little, in the scheme of things to most Americans, and that's all over the place now.
Yeah, I mean, if you repeat something enough, it turns into a chant, almost a hypnotic drumbeat that, you know, lulls you into submission, almost as if you're in a trance of some sort. And some reporters even have a sing-song melodic quality to their voice.
Well, that's true, and I do think that, you know, there's an effort to plaster the information landscape with the same information so ubiquitously that people give up and just think this is a boring way.
Submission.
That they're an outlier to if they think differently, when they're really not, but you're made to feel that way.
Well, and that's why, Cheryl, the work that you're doing, that's why what we do out here in Colorado is to keep our independent voice out there, search for truth and search for clarity on these issues. So one thing, so people don't feel alone, but also so that they can get their brains around these issues, so that they can talk with their friends and their family and their colleagues. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, let's talk just a little bit about Lester Holt and what he had to say about news reporting. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another one of my great sponsors. They're located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They are entrepreneurs. They are a family-owned business. They have a wide range of knives and tools from the best makers from throughout the world. Whether or not you're a chef or a collector or a sportsman, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Cheryl Atkison and Helen Jean Mitchell.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to Kim Munson. We've got to get to the toll roads, I realize, with that song, Life in the Fast Lane. We're talking about censorship with Cheryl Atkison. And just a couple of things before we get over to that, because you had recently reported on a full measure with on Sinclair Television about these toll roads. But I was astounded, Cheryl Atkison, when I saw that Lester Holt, who had received the Edward R. Murrow Lifetime Achievement Award, he is with NBC, made the comment that he thinks that fairness is overrated. Now, I see there's some other things within context, but just that term from a news person, that fairness is overrated, strikes fear in my heart on the fair reporting on freedom of the press. What's your thoughts on that, Cheryl?
Can you imagine accepting an Edward R. Murrow Award and uttering those words and people in the room not wondering if they're on, you know, in an alternate universe? But this is what I'm hearing from journalists and journalism groups. It's kind of been going around for the last few years, minimum. And I don't know what to say about it, except I don't think Lester Holt is part of an organized effort to do this. But if I didn't know better, I would say there is, because so many journalism organizations and professors and people are uttering the same words in the same language. And I would never have imagined you could get legitimate journalists to, in a pretty short period of time, entirely rethink and redefine their mission as being the opposite of what it is. And I've written before, it's kind of like if a medical school were teaching medical students that diet and exercise are overrated, when in fact those are fundamental to your health. I think fairness and objectivity are fundamental of basic good hard news reporting. They're not something to be cast aside or to be, you know, excited about throwing away.
Right. And I see a pushback, though. I do think that people are looking for alternative places for information. What you're doing on Full Measure is really important. And again, your website, CherylAtkison.com, is so important. But we have just a few minutes left. And one of your recent subjects was on these toll roads. And when I was on city council was when I was starting to see these, they were calling them managed lanes or a variety of things, but it's like, wait a minute, we're paying gas taxes that are supposed to go to roads and bridges. But yet I was also looking at this and they were peeling anywhere from 20% to 30% out of those gas taxes to go for things that weren't roads and bridges and that helped cars and mobility. And then we were building highways but making people to pay, and it didn't seem right to me. But what's your thoughts on this, Cheryl?
Well, I focus on, they call it dynamic tolling. And so the tolls, for example, outside of D.C. on a new road, they're sliding scale. They go up and down depending on traffic. The more you need to use these lanes, the higher the price goes. So it's upwards of $50 for 10 miles or less. And who can afford that? I mean, most people cannot. So, you know, there's two sides to this. I will tell you that the companies that lobby to put these in, and this is how these happen, they say, you know, it provides a lot of money that they pay for highway improvements elsewhere in the state. The state says it's better than raising taxes or doing nothing to make improvements. But I will tell you, I think they're hugely unpopular, and yet they claim there's a satisfaction rate of like 95%. So it got me thinking. I'm like, why are more and more of these going in? And they're coming to a city near you, believe me. And it turns out it started with an Australian company lobbying the state of Virginia. Now there's Spanish companies and others. But they come in, they make contributions to the state legislatures, you know, political campaign contributions, and they convince them through this process that this is a great idea. And I think that's why they're going in. I'm not sure, you know, that they are, at least most commuters see them to their benefit, although, again, the other side is the state and officials who agree to put these in claim that a lot more money goes into highway improvements overall because of these roads.
And just I was on city council for 4 years, and I know what those narratives are out there. But it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that, I mean, many times you'll see people not using those lanes because they don't want to pay extra money. And it seems, and they put these lanes in under the guise of addressing congestion on the roads. Well, it seems to me like if you had that extra lane that more people could use, that would relieve congestion on the roads. Your thoughts, Cheryl?
Right, and the companies argue, well, we built it for you for free, that you wouldn't, extra lane you wouldn't have had yourself, and now we're collecting the tolls and they get to keep them, you know, like through the end of the century or something. But again, I always follow the money when something doesn't make sense to me. People are telling something's good for you and that people like it when I don't see the same thing. So I gave, you know, both sides of that issue and the report on full measure.
Okay.
See all of these stories, good old-fashioned reporting like it used to be, at fullmeasure.news for free. You can see the replays anytime.
And that's really important. Cheryl, in your research on this, had you done any research regarding how much money is actually being peeled out of the gas tax money being used for things other than roads and bridges? Have you had a chance to look at that?
No, that's a great idea, because I know I'm like you, so many highway funds from the federal government, I know, and so much gas tax money is given every year, and yet we're seeing, like you said, more and more toll roads as if it's not enough to do the basic work that needs to be done on our highways. Why? You know, I don't know. I think that's a really good question.
Well, and I think that it is around 20% to 30% that is being peeled out, and this has been happening over a number of years. And some of that money's been going to bike lanes and to multimodal, trying to get people. And we're seeing this narrative out here in Colorado. Legislators are saying we want you out of your cars. But freedom of mobility, Cheryl, is inherent in everyday people being able to thrive and prosper. So quickly, Helen Mitchell, do you have any final thought? Or I know you were just really excited to be on the show with Cheryl.
Yes, I am. It's very interesting to hear all the perspectives of what's happening with the toll roads. I was doing some research about that too. And the question is, you know, where does this money go?
Typically, so just exactly what Cheryl said is follow the money. Cheryl Atkison, what is your final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
I will will hope people don't give up when they hear or see online, don't live in that box that we call the internet, and think that you're an outlier with your thoughts and views, that you should keep your mouth shut because somebody says you shouldn't think that way. To the extent that that which we think and want to do is legal, we have a right to do it. And the notion that we're self-censoring or being censored by others, I think, stands to redefine this country in a way we don't like if we don't continue to speak out and understand that we are really not outliers when we want to defend free speech, free press, and so on. We're in the majority.
Absolutely. Cheryl Akison, thank you so much for joining us. And that website is cherylakison.com. And the show is Full Measure on Sinclair Television. And Helen G. Mitchell, it's great to have you in studio. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
And our quote for today is John Stuart Mill. He said, to refuse a hearing to an opinion because they are sure that it is false is to assume that their certainty is the same thing as absolute certainty. All silencing of discussion is an assumption of infallibility. So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. You are not alone, my friends. God bless you, and God bless America. Twisting, turning further from my